listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Life really is hectic these days. There's so much going on. I hear people complaining that they can't focus, they're horribly disorganized, they get emotionally distressed, they don't follow through or complete projects the way they really want to. Perhaps people say it's the effect of so much technology and distraction. Well, these are also the symptoms of a syndrome called attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, which we commonly know as ADHD, which afflicts 10% of children and 5% of adults, causing them problems in their relationships and at work in particular. And our guest today here on Full Power Living is an ADHD expert, here to tell us how to bring yourself from scattered to centered. Welcome to Full Power Living. We're the only show on international media dedicated to understanding the power and importance of human emotions. I'm Eileen Dillon, your show creator and host, and I want to invite you to join me on our two chats, one or the other, emotionalpro.com radio show page or blogtalkradio.com/FPL for Full Power Living. You can also call toll free 888-498-0570. That's 888-498-0570. Dr. Alicia Mayer completed college and medical school in only 6 years. That's an amazing feat. And in the midst of her schooling, she took a year to travel around the world studying medicine in various cultures. And then she returned to Los Angeles, where she completed a psychiatry residency at Harbor UCLA Medical Center and had a fellowship in mind-body or psychosomatic medicine. Later, she became the Associate Director of the Psychiatric Consultation Service of Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, and she became an Associate Professor of Psychiatry at UCLA. Now, all during that 15 years of studying, practicing, and teaching in academic medicine, she was also living yoga in ashrams and going on retreats, and observing medical care as she traveled to more than 30 countries. So Dr. Mayer has developed a spiritual neuroscience that integrates alternative and Western medicine, spirituality, and neuroscience toward the idea of innovating in current medical practice. She's also an ADHDer herself, which we're going to be talking about more today as we discuss ideas from her book, From Scattered to Centered, and you can find her on the web on fromscatteredtocentered.com. So, Dr. Mayer, welcome to Full Power Living.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, you wrote this book to help adults who have ADHD, mm-hmm. and you're one of those ADHDers, as you call them in your book. And so I thought we'd start by having you review briefly for us what it is and what kinds of problems it creates for people.
Sure. So ADHD, the simplest way to understand it is that it's a disorder of the way that certain areas of the brain process a neurochemical called dopamine. And there's some other ones as well, but that's the main issue. And it's a genetic or inherited issue. And then effectively this causes problems with concentration, with communication, with focus, motivation, follow through, and a lot of frustrations and emotional reactivity.
Wow. And it also manifests differently in children and adults, having more of the emphasis on hyperactivity in children. Is that correct?
Sure. And part of it is that adults are able to choose their lifestyle a little bit more, so they're not going to choose to probably sit in a chair all day if they have a lot of hyperactivity. And then also, as an adult, you've learned that you're really not going to be able to jump in front of the line or get up and run around. So they learn to sit still. However, there's this inner restlessness. So the hyperactivity can still be there, but it's felt more as an inner restlessness or an inner agitation.
Mm-hmm. But Even though it is a hyperactivity disorder, the way it's treated is largely by administering stimulants. So can you talk about why stimulants work backwards in a way of speaking for ADHDers?
Sure. This is something that's often confusing. So like I mentioned, this is a disorder of the way the brain processes dopamine. And dopamine is one of the main components in those stimulants. They're made to increase dopamine. So because they process it differently, it has a different effect. So in people with ADHD, the stimulants will actually slow them down, calm them down. And someone without it, obviously they get stimulated.
Mm-hmm. Now, some doctors with whom I've spoken emphasize that they don't believe that ADHD is a real disease or disorder. Have you heard that
before? They're so lucky not to have had any experience with it. For those of us who have, we know very much that it's a disorder. And there's plenty of scientific research, like I said, that we know it's inherited. We know it's the way the brain processes these neurochemicals. There's been plenty of studies.
And there are two chemicals that are involved with ADHD. One you've mentioned, dopamine, and the other is, help me with the pronunciation,
norepinephrine.
Well, I was thinking more acetylcholine. Yeah.
Yeah, people with ADHD don't have a deficit of acetylcholine necessarily. They're just more dependent on acetylcholine. So that's another neurochemical that helps us concentrate and focus. So if your dopamine is low, your norepinephrine is low, you're going to be more dependent on acetylcholine.
Uh-huh. And what's, now, dopamine is what gets created or moved around the brain when we have positive experience. It's part of what makes us feel good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a pleasure neurochemical.
Okay. And what happens if you have ADHD, if you have this inherited tendency or syndrome, what happens with the dopamine? You don't get as much. I recall that. But what happens exactly?
So you don't get, well, you have kind of the same amount, but you're not able to use it effectively. So someone with low dopamine, they have less motivation, they have less ability to follow through. But what we also see is they go after those pleasurable experiences. They go after that excitement. They go after things that will increase their dopamine. So they're trying to get dopamine increased on their own. So that's often why we see these impulsive acts, you know, trying to get excitement, novelty, new experiences. And they're kind of effectively self-medicating, trying to get that dopamine up.
Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the oh, dear. That's, sorry about that. That's one of the reasons that that somebody with ADHD can't, hold on just a minute here.
They can't finish their train of thought, for example. That's
right.
A good example.
And they can't finish their train of thought, and they jump from one thing to the other because they're after a while you need more and more and more, correct?
Well, they don't have a reserve of it, so it's that they just need to keep getting it from the outside. So unfortunately, it comes along with novel experiences. So if you look at riding a roller coaster, the first time you ride a roller coaster, you'll get some dopamine. But then the next time you ride that same roller coaster, you're not going to get as much because it's not a new experience. So then you got to go to a bigger, more exciting roller coaster, and you know, pretty soon you're traveling the country looking for roller coasters.
Mm-hmm. And that is one of the things that gets in the way of relationships. If I have a partner or a friend who is speeding from one thing to the next and can't really focus and so forth, that could be very difficult on my relationship, could it not?
Oh, yes. And one of the primary people who will bring someone in for adult ADHD is the spouse. It's often not the person with the ADHD, it's the spouse that wants them treated. Because, yes, jumping from one thing to another, being restless, always needing stimulation. Sometimes that stimulation can come about through fighting, through kind of picking a fight, getting that excitement. And obviously that would be very hard on a relationship.
Yeah, definitely would. And so talk to me for a minute about, you have this issue, you've lived with it. What's it like being inside of ADHD?
Well, it can be very difficult, and that's one of the reasons I wrote this book, is for people just to feel better about it if they are struggling with this. I had trouble since before I can remember, just as long as I've been alive. Preschool was pretty difficult. My desk was pretty much in the hall for my entire first grade year. I was labeled the bad kid because I couldn't sit still, couldn't stop interrupting others, couldn't follow directions. And the hardest part for me was I couldn't imagine how these other kids were paying attention, were behaving themselves. Like a lot of people with ADHD, I was pretty smart, so I didn't need to study. I was able to make good grades. And also, like people with ADHD, I could hyper-focus on things that interested me. So when it came to the workings of the human body, you know, the aspects of medicine, I was hyper-focused, would study it nonstop, and was really excited about it. So I managed to get into medical school, and I did pretty well during the basic science years. And then I did well during the clinical years, but it was more overwhelming. So like a lot of people with ADHD, I was doing okay from the outside, but I was really struggling on the inside because the patients would be telling me all these details, and I needed to be able to organize them and, you know, pick out which ones were important, and that's very hard. So once I got into psychiatry residency, my fellow psychiatrist professors kind of staged a bit of an intervention where they said, you know, we think you have ADHD and you need to get this treated. And so I did. I started out with medication treatment, and I started learning everything I could about ADHD. I was also into spiritual study, like you mentioned in the introduction. So I was also doing yoga, breathing exercises, meditation, and just combining all of this for a treatment of ADHD. And then I was eventually able to get off the medication and just continue with these practices that are listed in the book. And now people are really shocked to find out that I had ADHD. Nobody can guess it.
Wow. That really is amazing. Okay, so I have a child who we discovered had dyslexia. And I learned that dyslexia really is a gift, and on a spiritual level, it offers a different way of focusing on life. And as long as you have studied and worked in the spiritual arena, what are the spiritual benefits of ADHD?
Well, that's a beautiful way of putting it. I think people with ADHD are great at thinking outside of the box. And perhaps their brains move so quickly and they entertain so many streams of thought that they tend to come up with lots of ideas long past when such thoughts occur to others. And they often have a very visual memory, so they're good at seeing the big picture of things. And then I think they're energetic and fun to be around. So I think in a spiritual way, the fact that the brain works differently brings a lot of new things into their lives and the lives of those around them.
If only we can tolerate what it takes to get to it. But
exactly.
That's the point of your book, though, that there are things, if you have ADHD, there are lots of things that you can do to tame the symptoms. And in that book, you list seven symptoms that include decreased focus, lack of follow-through, disorganization, social issues, like we've been talking about, emotional reactivity, inner restlessness, and impulsivity. And I note that in your book, you give a chapter to each one of these, plus you give things that a person can do over a 30-day period to actually improve the functioning in these areas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really great. So it's the total picture, because lots of people have symptoms like this. You know, certainly I have disorganization, for example. So it's the total symptom. It's like you would have this as a package that would, and you also have a self-test in there to help people determine whether they have ADHD or not.
Right. There's a self-assessment both in the book and on the website where the the totality of the symptoms are listed out, and people can see if they have enough to actually meet the criteria for ADHD.
Okay, well, I'd like to look at some of these. We've talked already some about the focus issues, how because you don't have as much available dopamine, the brain flies from one thing to the next. So as it's flying, is it that you can't stay aware? And again, I'm bringing a little spiritual stuff in here. You can't stay aware in the present? Is that what it is?
Yes. Often it's very difficult to be grounded or centered in the present moment because there's so many streams of thought that are all going at the same time, taking away your attention.
Hmm. Wow, that's very, very interesting. Well, let's take a look at what happens with a lack of follow-through. How does this the way the chemicals operate in the brain affect our follow-through if we have ADHD?
Okay. Well, we need to have a certain amount of motivation and energy behind what we're doing, and we also have to have enough focus so that we don't get distracted and do something else in the middle of one project. So a lack of follow-through is often when somebody starts a project, a lot of energy behind it, and then the energy drops off, so they leave it, or they get distracted and decide to do something else, and so they leave it. So lots of unfinished projects in the life of someone with ADHD.
I'm just struck by what this must do for people if they don't know they have ADHD when it comes time for New Year's resolutions.
Yeah, well, I think in every way, it's what I see is so much relief. When people see the book or when they talk to me, there's so much relief. They've been struggling so hard looking at other people, not knowing why they're not able to follow through on things the way other people are. And it's just such a relief to see that, okay, this is what's happening, and I don't have to struggle that hard anymore.
You know, that's one of the things with my child who has dyslexia. We didn't know until age 17. And that child was unable to plan. The dyslexia entered into the time zone, and so there wasn't planning, couldn't figure out how long something was going to take, when to get it done, and so forth. And as a parent, I had a really hard time telling whether he was deliberately doing this or he really had a problem. And it did help me to realize he really had a problem.
Yeah, I think the more we understand these different illnesses, the more we can have compassion and actually help people with them. That happens a lot with ADHD, that people think, oh, of course they don't want to wait in line, or they don't want to wait their turn in talking, and nobody does. And they don't realize that it's actually more an issue of they can't than they just don't want to.
Yeah. And so, but again, they're like everything on the earth, there are pluses and minuses. Like you say, there are lots of benefits. You get to be a sparkly person who thinks outside of the box, but you also may not function in the more predictable ways that we like our lives to work, whether we are the person with the ADHD or we're the person living with the ADHD.
Right, and I think that's another thing in the book, is that it's important just to understand what's going on in your own brain and why you might be doing things a certain way. And then there's ways to do things more effectively. But it's not about there's something wrong with you and you need to fix it. It's more about if you're struggling, here's a more effective way to do things.
And I don't know
who you are.
Right. I don't know about you, but having worked as a therapist for many years, I find the more people can accept that there's really not something wrong with them, there's just something they need to learn to deal with, the more easily or more completely they're able to deal with it. Would you agree with
that? Yes, and I think it's true that we're just all different. And if you're struggling in a certain way, then why not learn more about yourself and how to do things more effectively rather than just feeling bad that you're not like someone else?
Okay, it's time for us to take a break. I'm talking with Dr. Lisa Mayer about how you can take yourself from scattered to centered, and be sure to call in with your questions, 888-498-0570. You're listening to Full Power Living. We'll be right back.
Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
As a parent, have you found all the parenting information you've been hearing lately a bit confusing? Are you having trouble sorting out the best response to your defiant child, or feeling hopeless about regaining respect from your teen, or determining whether your actions as a parent are the right ones? Instead of the usual pressures of parenting that you've been experiencing, you can partner with your child, raising incredible kids who are destined to become amazing adults. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, giving you the opportunity to become the incredible parent for incredible kids. We have the method and the tools. You bring your optimism for learning and the kids. Raise Incredible Kids offers a comprehensive system for raising kids who are responsible, make their own great decisions, and become immune to peer pressure. To get you ready for this new era in parenting, get my free 10-page report, Incredible Communication That Helps You Create Incredible Kids, by visiting RaiseIncredibleKids.com now. That's RaiseIncredibleKids.com. Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. Remember that upcoming guests are listed at the top of our radio show page on EmotionalPro.com. And next week, my guest is Dr. Cynthia Andrews, sharing her ideas of how to transform emotion into energy as she shows us the path of emotions. Thank goodness people are finally realizing how important emotions are in life. So join me for this energizing discussion. And if you can't listen to our live broadcasts, subscribe to Full Power Living on iTunes. We also want to thank you for helping us with our mission of transforming our world through the mastery and power of human emotions. Now, Dr. Mayer, you include a lot of stories in your book, From Scattered to Centered. What are the primary emotions that, if a person doesn't understand that they have ADHD, or maybe even if they do, that a person experiences?
I would say the number one is frustration. Mm-hmm. And I would say that's not just for the person with ADHD, but the people around them. There's just a lot of frustration.
Okay, so there you go. Frustration, and frustration.
Yes.
Okay, now one of the things that's happened in recent years, we used to believe that the brain was the way the brain was, and once you reach maturity, nothing changed. And now we know about neuroplasticity. And so every time you have an experience and, say, the dopamine comes up, you essentially are laying in a track in your brain, and the exercises you give both help you lay different tracks, and they also take advantage of the other chemicals you have in your brain that you can work with when you have ADHD. Will you talk about that, please?
Sure. So the examples that I give in the book and the exercises are all based on a 30-day implementation model. And the reason for this is that if we apply something different, if we use our brain differently for 30 days, more or less, consistently, then you'll train your brain to function differently in that area. So like you said, laying down new pathways. So that's the idea behind these different exercises. And then as far as other things, just working with the other neurochemicals that we have, one simple example of that is, you know, we were talking about acetylcholine. That's actually highest in the morning in most people. So if you need to do tasks that require concentration, I often recommend that people do them in the morning when they have the most acetylcholine, if, you know, they have a deficiency in dopamine or issues with dopamine because of ADHD. So oftentimes when we get up, we check email and, you know, do this and that, and we're actually wasting that high acetylcholine time in the morning.
Mm-hmm. So it doesn't really matter if you're a morning person or a night person, since acetylcholine is highest in the morning. If you have ADHD, that's your best time to draw on your brain.
Yeah, if your energy might be higher at other times. One other big component with ADHD is getting the sleep cycle in order. Sometimes if we're taking sleeping medications, particularly the over-the-counter Tylenol PM, that kind of medication, that decreases acetylcholine, so you wouldn't have more in the morning, you'd have less. And, you know, if your sleep is very off, if you're staying up very late, then obviously being tired would override that advantage of acetylcholine in the morning.
And I like that you suggest also things that people can eat, like nuts and dairy products, egg yolks, broccoli, lettuce, that those actually increase the levels of acetylcholine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also the amino acids in things like egg yolks and nuts are used to make dopamine and norepinephrine. So getting those essential amino acids, the building blocks for making some of these neurochemicals, is helpful.
Mm-hmm. Now, I was talking to you about having learned something about dyslexia, and you're talking about ADHD. My child with dyslexia also had sleeping disorders. From your research and your knowledge, are there connections between these types of disorders?
They're different. They play out in similar issues with schoolwork and self-esteem issues, but they're actually in the brain, have different causes and different areas are affected.
All right, so on our chat, it's being offered that a lot of what you're talking about fits our chatter. However, that person tried Adderall for ADHD, and it made them speed up, so they went off. Does that mean a person would not have ADHD, or does it mean anything?
Well, it would make me suspicious that there was something else going on. So generally, if I have someone who is sped up on Adderall, but the history was very strong for ADHD, I might try them on Ritalin, because Ritalin is more dealing with dopamine, whereas Adderall is dealing with both dopamine and norepinephrine. So some people just don't like the physical effects of norepinephrine. So one thing would be to switch. But the other thing I've done is, you know, I do a lot of labs on my patients, a medical workup. So I've found ones with, you know, high mercury or other heavy metals. Had one with high mercury, one with high lead. So it came out as looking like ADHD, but it was actually heavy metal poisoning. A young man who had low testosterone, and that made him look like he had low motivation, low ability to focus and concentrate. But once we corrected the testosterone, he did fine. And he was another one who was on Adderall, and it wasn't working. So I would just make sure that you get a complete workup and there's nothing else going on.
So another question we have on the chat is exactly that kind of confusion that goes on. This person says that they recently listened to an interview with Dr. Bessel van der Kolk, and his view was that children are often diagnosed with ADHD when they may be showing the effects of ongoing trauma from things like emotional or physical abuse. And so the chatter wants to know if you have an opinion about confusing PTSD-based behaviors with symptoms of ADHD.
Sure, and that's a great question that more and more people are asking. And I think what's important is that there's a comprehensive evaluation done again. So what we know statistically right now is that most children are diagnosed by their pediatrician or by their family practice physician. Not that they aren't highly trained professionals, but they aren't necessarily trained in diagnosing and treating ADHD. And they often don't do a comprehensive evaluation, meaning looking at more than one area. So not just the parent's report, but the parent's report and the teacher's report and even another area if possible. So you want to make sure that it's not just that they're having trouble with the parents, which could be a relational issue between the parents and child, but that they're also having trouble in school and that, you know, the person who's treating and diagnosing the ADHD is taking the time. You know, usually psychiatrists will take at least an hour to diagnose this, whereas somebody in pediatrics or family practice won't have that amount of time.
There's a psychiatrist who will spend an hour with you? That's great. You are
well,
one
I'd
of those.
I'd really like to spend an hour and a half for the first appointment. I think it's just so important to get it right from the beginning.
Absolutely. Well, that's the old adage of medicine that diagnosis is so key. If you if you diagnose the problem, then everything else falls into place.
Right. And even if one comes up with a diagnosis of ADHD, whether in a child or an adult, I don't think we should just stop with here's the medication and there you go. I think these other techniques, like the ones that I mentioned with behavioral techniques and psychological practices, these are all really important for correcting a lot of the self-esteem damage that's been done, as well as building better habits. Because generally, whether children or adults, they haven't developed the habits of organization and time management that'll be helpful for them. It's not
now,
enough just to give them pills.
Okay, good. I want to just follow up on that, and let's do talk about medication. One of the chatter says, does Lexapro and Cerazone help?
Those are actually antidepressants. So Lexapro is an antidepressant, anti-anxiety agent. So no, it doesn't actually affect the dopamine and norepinephrine pathways. So that would be different.
Does it interfere? I know, like with bipolar disorder, if you if you're not careful with the medication, it can make things worse. So, would something like Lexapro actually interfere with ADHD, or it just wouldn't treat the ADHD symptoms?
It doesn't treat the ADHD symptoms. I do have some people on Lexapro in addition to something else for ADHD. The reason being that about 40% of the time, someone will have another issue in addition to the ADHD. So they'll have anxiety or depression or something else. So often you need it in addition to treat the other issue, the anxiety or the depression.
Now, in your book, From Scattered to Centered, you say that there are basically two types of stimulant medications that are used with ADHD. So could you talk about those two types and what they actually do?
Sure. I like to just call them the Ritalin type and the Adderall type. So the Ritalin type, like I said, is more using correcting dopamine. And then the Adderall type is more dopamine and norepinephrine. That's just kind of a general way of looking at it. Then there are a lot of formulations of those two types. So there's longer-acting formulation. There's prodrug formulations that will be then turned into the active drug once they're in the gut. There's all sorts of different formulations that you would use for different children or adults, depending on what they're looking at.
Well, we had Dr. Peter Breggin on this show. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He does give medication. He's a psychiatrist, and he wrote a book called Medication Madness and Psychiatric Drug Withdrawals, another one, and he's an expert on Prozac, I think. And he says that you don't want to go on medication long-term because of the changes it creates in the brain, and yet ADHD is a lifetime illness. So I wanted to ask you, what's your do people with who take these medications, do they have to go on it long term, and what's your opinion about the long term effects?
Well, I wonder if he was speaking more towards the SSRIs like Prozac.
Yes,
we don't see that in ADHD. So we don't see tolerance, we don't see withdrawal. It's just different. It's using different neurochemicals, different parts of the brain. And we do sometimes have people on these medications long term. So I've seen people in their 70s on these medications. However, like I said, you can also get off the medications if you're able to develop the brain pathways through other ways, through these exercises. So it's not necessarily that one would need to stay on the medications forever. And it's not even necessarily that they would be suffering from the symptoms forever. Like I said, people are kind of shocked whenever they learn that I have ADHD if they didn't know me before I got treatment. So it's not something that you necessarily have to struggle with your whole life.
And have you been able to go off the medication as well?
Yes, I did.
Well, congratulations on that, from my perspective at any rate. And with something like a homeopathic remedy, there's this a thing that works where you give a small amount and the body corrects itself. Is there a possibility that there's self-correction, or does the chemical, the dopamine processing issue continue? You just know how to work with it.
I think you can actually correct, not so much from a homeopathic way of being, but by strengthening other parts of the brain. So we know, like, when you do meditation, particularly mindfulness meditation, you strengthen an area of the frontal lobe. And people with ADHD have a lot of trouble with processing through the frontal lobe. So that's the executive functioning part that helps us decide if our impulse is a good idea or not.
Mm-hmm.
So you're actually strengthening other parts of the brain so that you're able to function normally.
Very good. So another question that's coming in through on the chat is, can you have ADHD without being depressed? Or do depression and ADHD go hand in hand?
Well, like I mentioned, about 40% of the time there'll be something else in addition to the ADHD, but 60% of the time it's just the ADHD. So often what I see is people that are just worn out from struggling so hard in life, and once that's corrected by treating the ADHD, the feelings of depression go away. Now, they can actually have a separate major depressive disorder that would be treated separately, but it's certainly not a part of the ADHD. It can be a part of it because of all the psychological effects of, you know, being called the bad kid your whole life and struggling, but it's not necessarily a neurochemical part of it.
I see. Now, on a lot of medications, psychiatric medications, like you were saying, the SSRIs, for example, there's experimentation with the dosage. And so we have a question that's come through. How much trial and error is there with the medications for ADHD from your point of view as a doctor?
Well, generally, like I said, I like to spend time with people. So it doesn't take that long. We slowly will build it up while we're working on these other aspects, you know, the time management, the organization, some of the psychological reconstructing. So it doesn't take that long to get to the right dose. And then once you hit the right dose, if you really have ADHD, that's the dose you're going to need. So it's not like the SSRIs where they can actually, you know, as you build the serotonin, sometimes you can deplete the dopamine. So after a couple years, you need to go off of them because they're not working anymore. With ADHD, it's totally different. So once you find the right dose, that should be your lifelong dose if you're going to stay on it lifelong.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, Okay, so another question here is about yoga. We know that you do meditation and yoga, and you've already talked about mindfulness and the front part of the brain, but what do yoga and meditation do for you? Is it similar or different?
Well, meditation and yoga, so the meditation, like I said, it affects the other parts of the brain. The yoga is more to get the body in alignment with the brain, so becoming more centered and grounded. So I think it's an important practice to do in whatever form, you know, even if it's just a few minutes at home or whether it's in a class.
And does it help with the hyperactivity, too? Does it give your energy a place to go, so
well,
to speak?
Well, it helps with becoming more centered, so being able to slow down and to think before you do things. So in a way, it helps with that impulsivity, and it helps with the restlessness. So like I said, hyperactivity often shows up in adults as restlessness. It's often described as this feeling like they need to be doing something at all times. And so by doing yoga, you're doing something, but it's something that's very grounding. So it helps alleviate that restlessness and at the same time helps ground you.
Okay, and one final question I'll ask before our break that has come through on the chat. Can an MD, meaning non-psychiatrist, prescribe ADHD medications effectively?
Oh, they threw in that last word effectively because I was going to say yes, an MD can. Any MD can prescribe these medications. As far as the
actually,
part,
I'm the one who threw that word in. So,
okay, to make it a little harder question. So the easy question: yes, any MD can prescribe these, including psychiatrists. I would just want to make sure that the MD was spending enough time to do a comprehensive evaluation in order to make sure the diagnosis is correct. And I don't tend to see that with MDs whose practices are set up to see patients very quickly.
Right.
I'm not saying it's not possible, but I just don't tend to see that.
Okay, and we have one more follow-up, which I didn't understand before on the question. When you're using yoga and meditation, are they effective without the medication? Can you do those instead of?
It's a good question. And so what I've seen is that if you're able to get to a point of stability, that yes, those can be effective. Often people require the medications to get to that point of stability. So if you're sitting down to meditate and it's just torture and your brain is going in a million directions, which, you know, happens to all of us when we first start meditating, but if it's just torture where you're just forcing yourself to sit there and you're not seeing any benefit, it makes me wonder if medications might be helpful so that you can get the full benefit of meditation, so that you actually are strengthening those areas of the brain that you need to strengthen, and then you could get off of the medication and you'd still have that strengthened part of the brain there.
Great. Thank you. We're up to our second break. I'm talking today with Dr. Alicia Mayer about how you can take care of yourself if you have ADHD or ADHD-type symptoms. And she has her ideas in her book called From Scattered to Center. From Scattered to Centered. We're going to find out more about technology and ADHD symptoms when we return. You're listening to Full Power Living. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Do you know that emotionally, children form the foundation for their life during their first 7 years? Most adults just repeat that early emotional learning, good or bad, over and over for the rest of their lives. If you want to give your child an opportunity to live an emotionally masterful life, then join me, Eileen Dillon, also known as the Emotional Pro, for a free one-hour teleseminar on what it takes for your child to become an emotional master. You'll discover important things like what emotions are designed to do for us, four things it's vital for parents to tell their children about emotions, and the single most important thing to do when someone is feeling emotion. Register now at RaiseIncredibleKids.com. The time has come for us to allow emotions their rightful place in our lives, as the tools and helpers they're created to be. Find out what you need to know in order to give this vital information to your children so they can live emotionally masterful lives. Go now to RaiseIncredibleKids.com for your free Emotional Mastery Teleseminar. We're back here on Full Power Living talking with Dr. Alicia Mayer, MD, about the how to deal with ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, as an adult. And one question that was outstanding still, Dr. Mayer, was does memory get affected by having ADHD? And I know you do discuss that in your book.
Mm-hmm. It can be difficult to lay down memories whenever you're not able to focus or concentrate. So the ability to memorize things, the ability to remember isn't affected, but because of the way the information's coming in, sometimes it can be difficult to lay down the memories.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's not an organic issue or whatever. It's an attention issue more. So another question. Boy, I can hardly get to my own questions today. I'm delighted we're having so many. Do you think that ADHD is overdiagnosed?
Well, that's a good question and one that's obviously coming up a lot in the media right now. I think it's both overdiagnosed and underdiagnosed, just to make it a little more complicated. So I think it's overdiagnosed like I said, often the diagnosis is made very quickly by someone who's not necessarily trained to make the diagnosis. So there may be some overdiagnosis there. But we know that only about 20% of adults with ADHD are actually diagnosed and receiving treatment. So there's a large number of adults who are not getting diagnosed and are not getting the help they need.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was at my granddaughter's school not too long ago, and I just felt like I could see ADHD in the making. I was this was a very good school. I'm not faulting it, but I was so astounded. I was in classrooms from kindergarten through second grade, and most of the teacher's attention was going to getting children to sit still. And it just seemed like ADHD in the making, because all that energy in those little bodies was just going to explode at some point.
Yeah, I don't know how natural it is to have children sitting that much, but I can defer to my teacher colleagues who I'm sure study that more.
Uh-huh.
And then also I think that there's because of the greater awareness of ADHD, there may be a little bit more diagnosis of the disorder, whereas maybe 20, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, it wasn't as well known. And so you'd have the hyperactive kid or the quote-unquote bad kid, but you didn't necessarily think, okay, this kid needs to see a doctor and maybe they have ADHD.
Well, I'm listening to you and thinking maybe I had some ADHD as a child, because I could focus sometimes, but I usually needed help, like with music, and I blurted out things all the time and got in trouble for that. And I remember my grandfather saying, "Quit your running," because I was constantly on the go. So. And sometimes as I got to be a young adult, there were times when I felt like the top of my head was going to blow off. So yeah. I don't know exactly what it was. Nobody ever diagnosed me or thought about it. But, certainly I'm empathizing with these symptoms, if indeed I didn't have them myself, because they're really difficult. They're inside of you. It's like a bunch of monsters trying to get out sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good way of describing it. And even if someone doesn't meet the full disorder, you can still have symptoms in different areas that may still be causing frustration and difficulties for you. And, that's one of the things that you can treat with some of these exercises.
Mm-hmm. Now, in June, I'm going to have a program with a professor from the University of Washington, Dr. David Levy, who has been working with people who are having difficulties because of technology and multitasking. And you talk a lot about that in From Scattered to Centered. And that many of the symptoms that people may develop as a result of being involved with technology and our fast-paced world are a lot like ADHD. Tell us more about that, please.
Yes, I do develop, I devote a lot of the book to this because I think it's really important and something that I'm seeing more and more. So as I was treating ADHD in myself and others and getting to a point where it was no longer something that people would guess about in me, I saw the people around me becoming more and more ADHD-like, particularly my husband, as he was on the iPhone and constantly distracted. And he started looking much more ADHD than I was. But I saw it develop over time. So I thought, wow, it's just there's a lot of habits that we're picking up because of technology that are making us function more like people with ADHD. And so I started really looking into the research that's there. And there is some research that is maybe not definitive, but it's certainly suggestive that the way we're getting everything in digested sound bites, the way we have so many different things that we can, focus on at once, that it's really affecting the way our brains are working.
Mm-hmm. And, I was discussing with my daughter, who in October fell and shattered her ankle on the stairs in her home. And I was telling her about this upcoming program, and she said, "Mom, that's how I broke my ankle. I was multitasking and not paying attention closely enough."
Mm-hmm.
So there may be other things going on that, you know, effects that we haven't even talked about yet, like physical injury.
Right, right. And we know that people with ADHD tend to have more accidents and get physical injuries. And I think if we're doing the same thing, you know, when you're multitasking, you're not focusing on one thing at a time. And that's kind of the same as what's going on in the brain of the person with ADHD. They have lots of streams of thought. They're not focusing on one thing at a time. So it's almost like people without ADHD are creating it in themselves.
Isn't that interesting? What happens with driving when you have ADHD?
So people with ADHD are often more erratic in driving, changing lanes. You know, they tend to have more accidents, like I mentioned. I had one patient who noticed that when she was on the medication, people didn't honk at her as much. And then whenever she was off the medication, people were honking at her more. And she had no idea how she was driving any differently, but there was this objective measure of whether she was on her medication or not.
Isn't that interesting? Wow. So do you have a story of a person who, other than yourself, because your outcome sounds really good too, a person you've worked with who was really suffering with some of these symptoms of ADHD, who had a really great outcome, and what they did differently? I know you have a lot of stories in your book, but give us your best one.
I was just thinking my most recent one, the last patient I saw this week, and she's just doing really great. She just sent me a New York Times article for her design business that she opened that's being featured in all these different newspapers. And she, for so many years, I mean, she dropped out of school because just couldn't do it. I think she was 14 when she dropped out and just really struggled for many, many years. First came to see me for anxiety. We started treating that. But as that came under control, we noticed that there's other things that were going on. And diagnosed the ADHD, and then actually she had a copy of the book and started reading it, and then we started working on her ADHD, and she just said everything got so much easier. Her relationships became so much easier. She was able to listen to people without being overwhelmed by their details. She was able to set about with her to-do list and actually complete it, and she was able to put this business together that she had always dreamed of, and that's now being very successful. So she's had a great outcome, and there's been a lot of great outcomes. That's just the most recent one.
Well, what were some of the main things she did? Obviously, you probably put her on some medication.
Mm-hmm.
What else did she do that really helped her?
So one of the things she did was we talked about communication. That's one of the things that I talk about in the book, is how to mirror other people, how to use eye contact and let people know that you're listening. You know, how to listen for their words and repeat their words back to them, as opposed to listening while formulating your own response, which people can tell you're not really listening whenever you do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So working a lot on the communication, working on having a to-do list, time management, but not just in figuring out a schedule, but figuring out the one that works for you specifically. So figuring out, okay, I do better at these tasks in the morning. My energy dips at this time in the evening, so I'm going to do those tasks in the evening. You know, just really figuring out how to manage the tasks of the day according to the energy.
You know, and I also like in your book how you suggest that people, I'm sure you do this in your practice here, that you suggest people reward themselves with things they like to do. For example, mm-hmm. you can check your email after you do X, Y, or Z.
Right, and I mentioned that one of the things that causes release of dopamine is the novel or new experiences, and
mm-hmm.
especially new information. So when the little ding goes off letting you know you have a text message, if you wait to check it, you've got a little bit of a dopamine rush, so to speak, from knowing that there's some information there that you haven't received yet. So if you wait to complete whatever task you're on, if you're writing something, if you wait till you've completed that page, or you're reading, wait till you complete that chapter, before you check it, you can kind of use that little dopamine rush that you have, and it actually helps motivate you. So it's not just rewarding, it's actually using the way your brain works to get
mm-hmm.
the dopamine that you need.
And so in all of this, you know, the thing that I've been hearing more and more is the more you know yourself, the more you're mindful of who you are, and the more you work with who you are, the more smoothly your life is going to flow. And that sounds like it's really imperative if you have ADHD.
Exactly, and I love the way you put that.
Thank you. I don't think I can say it again, but anyway, I'll listen. Well, this has really been a fascinating exploration, and I know it's an issue that's vexing to a great number of people, as you've said, not only to the people who are diagnosed with ADHD, but most especially to the people who live with them and love them. So I want to thank you for offering the wisdom that you've gained both personally and professionally. Thank you for sharing that with us. And let me remind you, our listener, that the book is From Scattered to Centered, Understanding and Transforming the Distracted Brain, and the website is fromscatteredtocentered.com. So, Dr. Alicia Mayer, thank you for all your wisdom and knowledge and for being with us on Full Power Living today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
All right. Join us live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, which is noon Eastern, for more powerful experiences on Full Power Living. Remember, next week, Dr. Cynthia Andrews is going to take us on the path of emotions. It should be fun, because emotions are helpers in our lives. Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media has been our producer today. Thank you, Paul, for your years of support and applied technical genius and overcoming all ADHD patterns. And for now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you, pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon. Oh,